This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 126, recorded on July 18th, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a very, very warm. It's summer again, and it's just summer in Nebraska is just nasty. So here in Bellevue, Nebraska, we post the show notes, the world-class show notes, I say, every week out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions or comments or contributions, you can contact the show. Just send me an email. podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and I've gotten a couple emails lately, one from from Bradley. Bradley, if you're listening, thanks for your email. He was reaching out to us to ask some questions around recording equipment, but you can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Of course, find me on Twitter at Jay Collison, or you can follow the show schedule on Twitter at TheAverageGuyTV. You can also join us for live chat during the show. If this is your first time on the show, you're on the live stream page, just the regular live stream page, that way is chat. And you don't need an account. Just log in, give it a nickname, and you can join us in live chat. One of the advantages to being in the live show. I did create a brand new high bandwidth YouTube page as well. So if you are wanting, if you go out to theaverageguy.tv and look in the upper right-hand corner, there is now a live page and a high-bandwidth YouTube page. If you want better video, YouTube does it a lot better. You can click on that. It'll have YouTube and the chat, so you won't miss out on the chat. It'll just all be in one window and a little bit better video that way if you want to join us that way. So all new improvements as well. If you go to theaverageguy.tv/live, I've enabled the low-bandwidth process out there as well with live stream. Interested in you trying it in different scenarios if you're on the road or whatever. I did get some feedback last week. Some of the guys tried it, and it seems like it's working okay. If you want to access the show on your mobile device or in a low bandwidth situation, give it a try. You don't need to do anything different. Just go to theaverageguy.tv/live and give it a try. Report back to me kind of the conditions so I know maybe what the limitations on it are, and you can send me that email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. All right. Oh, and I also want to say, hey, thanks. We've had an amazing run with the Amazon subscription or the Amazon affiliate link as of late, and I know many of you guys have considered theaverageguy.tv when you're making Amazon purchases. Go out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon, and any purchases you make there kind of help out the show. It's been a great month so far, and I appreciate you guys doing that. I just wanted to say thanks. We're turning those dollars around into things that kind of help and benefit the show. So I appreciate it. All right, well, tonight I got a good crew. I got some guys back that haven't podcasted with me in a while. And so let's start on all the way to the right. And it's been, I don't know, Rennie, it's been a while since you've been out here, maybe 9 or 10 weeks. Thanks for coming out, Rennie. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks, Jim. Yeah, it's good to be back on. I think the last show I did was on networking around the house, that sort of thing. That was all good fun.
Yeah, it was good. Those shows did really well.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's the middle of winter here, so I've got my T-shirt on, windows open. It's got to get cold sooner or later. It's not bad weather we're having up here in Brisbane at the moment.
Well, good.
And
we're
all still celebrating that we won the Rugby League State of Origin over New South Wales for the 8th year in a row, so everyone's pretty happy around here.
Nice. Well, good celebration. That'd be fun to watch. We don't, you know, we do play rugby here in the United States, but it's not like it is there. So it's so congratulations. Always good to have you. So thanks for coming in. And then to his left, and the guy behind the microphone at JPEG to RAW and wearing the fancy do-rag, the gang-laden do-rag, Mike Howard. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Doing much better.
Good. Yeah. A lot better. We're kind of, hey, just give us a quick 1 minute on how you're doing, because not everybody has heard yet. Just give an update.
Yeah, just in June I was diagnosed with cancer. I went through the surgery and everything and got the news last Friday that it had not spread to the lymph nodes, which is good news. So whatever the treatment is from here on out will be much less severe, and the prognosis is very good. So
yeah,
a little bit of a roller coaster there, but it looks like things are doing good now.
Yeah, happy day. Although,
Wearing this to spare you from the business that's going on underneath it, not because I like wearing these things.
Yeah.
Against your advice, Mike, I actually had a look at those photos that you posted of the post-op.
Yes.
Injuries or wounds, whatever you want to call them. Boy, they didn't muck around, did they?
No. So what Vinny's talking about is I didn't put him on Facebook or anything like that, but JPEG to Raw has his own forums, and there is a post on there where I do a lengthy discussion about what happened. At the end of it, I put the photos, some before and after photos. Give you plenty of warnings and chances to back out before you see them. But anyway,
yes, you don't want to. But it's Mike. Good to have you. I know you're diving, back in. I know you kind of took a little hiatus from JPEG to Raw, and you're diving back in. Good to have you back on the show.
We had our first show this Tuesday on boudoir photography.
Yeah, you might want to go out if you're a guy. You might want to go out and see it. It's pretty good. I'm just gonna say. So, and then all the way to his left, and joining us from I don't even know where you're at these days, Christian Johnson. How are you?
I'm in a world of fantastic. I'm at the top of that scale today, doing very well, and enjoying the hot, sultry, humidified weather that we've had today. And what else can I say?
Are you're in the same place, just a different angle? It seems like the last couple of weeks you joined.
Yes. So last time you were facing this direction, and now we're facing this direction. Right, but it's in the same room, so. But yeah, things are going great.
Good. That stuff matters. So internship going well?
Yeah, going fantastic. Continuing to go on with the whole big data discussion we had last week, and making a lot of progress with some of those details. So very exciting. Very exciting time for me.
The cat's still alive there? You guys still battling it out?
The cat is actually lying on the kitchen table next to me. It's calmed down. We did have a territorial fight last night. It decided it was going to invade my room, and I taught it very quickly that it has its rightful place. So after a little bit of training and understanding of Alpha and Omega, I think we've made some progress.
Nice.
So.
Nice. Yes. All right. Well, we got to keep that cat in line. If you're new to the show, we've been talking about the cat at Christian's. He's staying with another family, and there's a cat there who stalks him during the show. We saw that in one of the first shows, and it kind of stalks him. So
yeah, and I went up to D.C. on Tuesday, and I swear to you, the cat bowl with the food looked all the whole situation looked fine. I came back, the thing was empty, and she was purring and yelping. And as soon as I put food in, she scurries over and is all happy and lovey. And then she starts trying to trounce him. Oh, they're a furball of unpredictable emotions.
Well, very good. And then just joining us all the way to the left, and I don't know if he has his earpiece in yet, but Andrew Morris.
Speaking of furballs of uncontrollable emotions.
Very nice. Andrew, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay.
Well, glad you could join us and jump in, and always good to see you.
Saving the problems of the corporate world today.
One trouble ticket at a time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, very good. Well, I got four great guys to talk about hard drives, and the way we're going to do this tonight is just it's kind of be an open forum. I don't have any specific agenda except to talk about what we use and some experience with them. And I know Mike has some visual aids that he will use when he's talking about them, and I've got a few of my own, and to go through the experience, the experiences we had with them. I think, guys, that for the average user, and that's kind of, or the average, let's say the average tech guy, if we talk about the average user and the average tech guy, those are kind of different. So let's talk about the average tech guy. Pretty comfortable with the hard drives and in the hard drive space, or at least where they've gone. There hasn't been a lot of innovation around hard drives for the most part, at least in form factor. Over the last a decade or so, we have seen the advent of the SSD drive come in, which has kind of changed things up. Most of those come in a 2.5-inch form factor. Most of the spinning drives that come commercially these days, of course, are 3.5-inch in size. And so if you go to Best Buy or your local outlet of some kind to go to purchase a hard drive, in most cases, if you're a consumer, and they're actually on the shelves, they're getting less and less of these, but in most cases, you're buying that 3.5-inch hard drive that's going to go in that desktop. Now, as laptops, well, let me strike that. As tablets and phones have come along, I think maybe hard drive sales are probably not what they used to be, as folks are now moving, you know, a lot of their data. I take pictures on my phone, and that immediately goes to the cloud, and so I don't need as much hard drive storage at home maybe like I used to. And so maybe those hard drive sales are down some. But for most people in what they're doing, those drives are going to come in that 2.5 or 3.5 inch form factor. They're going to come in, you know, those SSDs right now are anywhere between 120 gig and, let's say, half a terabyte. The spinning hard drives have probably made it up to that 4-terabyte range and have kind of stalled a little bit there for the most part. At least the fervor around it seems to have settled down as we talk about what those are, or as we talk about those sizes. It just doesn't seem like there's a bit real huge push right now to get 5 terabytes and 6 terabytes, and so things have kind of slowed down in that space. So let's start. Let's get a kind of an overview of when we talk about drives. Let's kind of talk about the ones we use. Let's get started on that one. And so, Rennie, I'll start with you. Let's just talk a little bit about, are you using maybe more, and what are you using, and are you finding you need more or less of these hard drives these days? And maybe talk in reference to, I know you're a Windows Home Server guy, so maybe bring that up as well.
Okay.
Is that too many questions all at once?
Yeah. Well, my main system has just got a 60 gigabyte OCZ Agility SSD in it. And then I've got 2 1-terabyte Seagates in RAID 0 for data. I tend to go for the smaller SSDs because they're still quite expensive. They were until quite recently very expensive here in Australia compared to what they were what they are in the US. Even in my HT PC, I've only got a 30 gigabyte SSD in there, but there's nothing on. There's only just Windows on it and a few other little odds and sods. So you don't need a lot of capacity. The server I've got. I've actually got an SSD in the server. It's a Samsung 830, which I got for cheap because the 840 was coming out and they were getting rid of them. And I got 3 2-terabyte Reds in a RAID 5. So at the moment I'm only storing, in terms of hard data, about 2.5 terabytes. So that's all my movies and documents and, you know, software and stuff like that. So that fits nicely into a 6-terabyte RAID array. And connected to that server, I've got a Sans Digital 4-bay box that is where all my backups go to. And for backups, I'm using mainly green drives. Or some old enterprise drives I had lying around. I must have been rich at some stage to buy them. But the server backups go to these enterprise drives, which are in a storage space because they're different sizes. And a 2-terabyte green drive just for the client backups, and one other drive, which is just a mirror for all the important documents and photos and videos that I back up to that, and then also back up to the cloud using CrashPlan. So, that's basic. I'm only a recent convert to RAID, I guess. I've had a RAID 0 on my box for a while, which I would only ever do if I had a good solid backup. Because one of them's going to go bad one day and be starting all over again.
Well, not too much different, though, than having one and one go bad, right? I mean, you still got to back them up. It just gives you the additional speed if you've got those striped in a RAID 0. So I too am a recent convert to that idea, and I'm just loving having that, having that. Hey, Andrew, I'm getting some scratching from you on your mic. I think when you're turning your head, can you pull that just away, a smidge away from me? Yeah, perfect. Thank you, man. appreciate that.
So
Rennie, I hear some SSDs, which I know you're using for speed. I heard some green drives in there. So that's for you. It's either storage or it's going on the C partition or the OS partition of the drive. Do you have PCs that also have a bunch of storage in it, or are you trying to move everything over to either your NAS or your home server?
I don't typically have a lot of storage on the actual PC itself. As I haven't built a computer without an SSD in it for 5 years now, so I was an early adopter. I've been lucky; I've never had one fail on me. I've got one that's so old it doesn't even have trim on it or anything like that. It was a first gen, and it's pretty slow these days. So I've only got, as I said, in my main production PC, I've only got 2 terabytes, two 1 terabyte drives, and the other PCs have got, the HD PC's just got 160 gig, the Western Digital Black, 2.5 laptop drive for recorded TV. And the wife's PCs, I think Christian's cat's escaped.
It's more like a puma.
So I've only got 160 gig for recorded TV in the HD PC, because most of that's archived anyway, straight away. And the wife's PCs, got a 250 gig ancient old Maxdor drive in it. So try to keep as much as I can on the server.
Still spinning. It's a good one. Mike, let's pop over to you. We got kind of an overview of what Rennie's running. What do you, how many drives do you have? Or give us some basic configuration of them.
In the house, I was counting them up before the show started, but in the whole house, I think we have over 50 hard drives, including SSDs, spindles, all that kind of stuff. So I have a PC, my wife has a PC, and both my sons have a PC, and then I have a couple of others for the podcasting. All of our main PCs have a SSD for the OS drive, and then a spindle drive for data. We install our main programs on the SSD. In my case, I have, I think, a 250 gig SSD for the main OS drive, and then I have another SSD where I load some of my programs like Photoshop and those kind of things, and also use that thing as a scratch drive for Photoshop, so get as much speed as I can. But in my case, I think I have, I don't remember how much I have, but I think I have 2 2-terabyte drives of mine, not in any kind of RAID, just in the computer, because with the photos, I keep all the photos on my computer and back them up. The computer that has the most drives, I have 18 terabyte of storage in my Unraid server, and that has, 11, 12, 13 drives in it. So that's my biggest case.
Are those all different size and kind? And
yeah, I'm looking at it now. So it goes, 2 terabyte is the biggest. I have a few, mainly 2 terabytes, some 1 terabytes, and a 1.5 terabyte, or 1 terabytes. And I have Hitachi, Samsung, Seagate, and Western Digital, all mixed in there.
Right. Yeah.
So looking at it,
Is that a Norco box?
It's a Norco 4020 box. And that's a loud, loud box, so it's in its own little room. The only thing I've ever noticed that's different between those drives, because I have not over the years seen, like, Hitachi's always fail, or some brand always fails. I don't think I have enough of a pool. 50 drives sounds like a lot, but it's not really a statistical lot. The only thing I noticed is the Hitachi seem to run a little bit hotter than everybody else. In my box, they're maybe 3 or 4 degrees hotter than the other drives.
Is that anecdotal, or do you have some to back that up?
Yeah, because Unraid gives you the temperatures of all the drives. Okay. It reports all the temperatures, so I can look down the list and see, yep, all the time, I have two Hitachis, and they both run several degrees hotter than all the rest of them.
Okay. And then a variety of laptops, right? You've got some laptops in the house.
Just work laptops, yeah. Okay. And then I use, for my Windows, I have Windows Storage Server instead of Windows Home Server. I have these boxes, which are wonder who they buy, Mediasonic, and they're four drive boxes, and I have the RAID version of them attached to it, and they're running RAID 5.
Okay. Lopto was asking if those Hitachi drives are the descendants of the IBM Death Star. Desk.
They look like it, yes.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that Norco box, are those drives hot swappable? Can you pull any of those drives with Unraid and just swap them?
I think the case is, but I don't think Unraid is.
Okay. All right,
it doesn't work. But
no options.
I know this isn't Unraid show, but that you can look it up and see what Unraid is all about. You know, look up and Google. But that's what Unraid allows me to mix them all together and still have protection.
Okay.
The one thing I would say is with that many drives in my house, I lose about a drive, at least one drive a year. Somewhere in the house, one drive is going to die each year.
Do you see any patterns in those, or is it pretty much a little bit of everything that fails?
A little, you know, I've had Western Digital die, Seagate's drive die. Actually, I haven't had a Hitachi die yet, but I only have two of them.
And have you lost any data when they die?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
No.
So you got enough backup stuff in place that no drive is left behind, right?
Correct.
In your case, all right. Okay, cool. Any other drives?
The SSDs I use, I'm stuck on the brand OCZ. So okay. Most of my all of my SSDs are OCZ brand. Different kind. This is a solid 3, but I use the, what is the one that starts with a V?
Vortex.
And they have a new one too, Velocity or something like that. So I've used all of those. OCZ has been the brand I've used. I've not had any trouble with them. They've run rock solid. So,
okay. Yeah, and I'm a Mushkin guy. Rich O'Neill got me kind of turned on to Mushkin. They're U.S. They're made here in the United States, or at least they're assembled here in the United States. And I've had 6 or 7 of those drives that I've installed in various places and have not had one come back. So that's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Christian, let's move over to you. I know you're not home, so you didn't probably bring a lot with you, but talk about maybe what you brought and then what you got back at home as well.
Yeah, so I just have with me right now my sister's college laptop because she's getting ready to go off to Spain, so there's no special hard drive in there. In terms of hard drives that we've been using traditionally, I think I've mentioned before on the show that we were big subscribers to the F4 drives, and I believe the Samsung F4 drives, just for doing data storage, not necessarily the fastest or highest performing drive, but very good performance, and it was like $70 for 2 terabytes worth per platter, so... and we just recently bought, I think they were Seagate's, but 3 terabyte drives for $99 each, which was really a great price point. And so that has let us build out our internal network. I believe our internal network storage is nearing 40 terabytes at this point, and it's really affordable to do. I would say the pricey part of that is if you want to get performance out of commodity hard drives, then you need to get a really nice RAID controller. So if you get some of the Intel LSI stuff to do high performance RAID, then you might put some investment and money there because those controllers aren't cheap. I believe ours was somewhere in the $400 to $800 range for the controller. I don't quite remember, but in terms of controllers, and people don't like to think about controllers as much as they do the hard drive, but you can get everything from your onboard run-of-the-mill controller that's onboard RAID in your motherboard, which to, like I said, the built-out Intel with the onboard cache and all that. I'm getting facts now. It was $500 that we paid for that Intel LSI controller.
Nice.
And... That's a rock solid kick-ass box. We had 8 Samsung F4s rated on that. I believe it's a rate that we have, which means you can swap a dead drive at any given time without data loss or RAID loss, and it's faster than an SSD, and that's 16 terabytes worth of storage that once you format it, it gets down to probably about 12, but like I said, really high performance and a nice price point. In terms of desktop hardwares, my dad and I recently upgraded to Revo hybrids, which had kind of on the way out in the sense that A, they don't sell them anymore, and B, the concept is not really popular among manufacturers. So the concept was you have an initial SSD space and then the rest of it is a spinning space so that you're getting really high performance, but you're also getting the storage that you need. And so we got those at steel half price at Amazon. I don't think we paid more than $200 for a pop for those. And that gives you the speed of a really high-performance SSD, and you stick it in your PCI Express slot, but it also gives you the storage of a regular hard drive. So it has a 1 terabyte spinning platter on it, and it has a 128 gigabyte SSD in front of it. And it will, basically, the way the technology of the controller works is that it moves the most frequently accessed sectors to the SSD, and then it moves the less used ones to the platter. So you still get storage, and then, like I said, stuff like your operating system files and your core files that really affects how well your PC runs is all on the SSD. So that's where you're getting the performance benefits. Unfortunately, that technology has phased out just because I think people are at this point are really just either they're getting a platter for data storage or they're getting an SSD for performance. But it was really a nice stopgap, to be honest.
Let me ask you, Does the controller for that's all on board, so the PC doesn't have any idea that that data is being cached.
Right.
It just sees it as one volume, right?
Yeah, so it installs a special software called Dataplex, OCC Dataplex, and it will actually, in the BIOS, I believe, show two different disks, but once you actually get to the OS and you've properly logic, you don't, it's your C drive, right? Yeah, so right. You might see in device manager two different devices, but when you're actually talking about partitions and how the OS sees it, it sees it as your C drive. Okay. That was a really nice tech. I mean, we love those. It's made my PC incredibly fast and has let me maintain my storage without having to either A, pay for like a 512 gigabyte SSD, which is really costly, and you lose some of the assurance in data integrity, and has kind of given us that versatility. So that's kind of cool for the desktop end. I think the kind of conclusion we can get to is that this whole market is really dynamic and is changing rather quickly. So I think we're going to come to this kind of cloud storage era where it's either going to be a lot of commodity hard drives that are spinning up four to eight terabyte platters, at least in the next 10 years or so. That's where you're getting your cloud storage from. And pretty much all desktops will converge upon SSDs, because really this idea of cloud storage and server storage and all that has really gotten to a point where if you got big files, you're storing them on platters either in the cloud or in your own server environment, and if not, then you're looking to get the performance out of an SSD. So yeah. I think that's kind of the direction the market has started to take.
I think that's well said. I think we're all talking, you know, from a tech guy perspective, if you've got a spinner and it's operational, in other words, you got it on your desktop or it's in a laptop, most of the time you're replacing those with an SSD. So the SSD has kind of made its way into the consumer world. Prices have gotten very reasonable on them, and so it's made its way in. And for most people, it's the way to breathe life back into an old piece of equipment, because in most cases, the bottleneck has become the hard drive, or the hard drive itself has become the bottleneck, and so an SSD will breathe some new life into some old equipment. So, Andrew, Christian, we'll come back. Andrew, yeah. What do you got?
I'm a heretic still. I think we've got 7 PCs in the house. What was that?
That was the cat, actually.
All right.
Running and prancing in front.
We've got more distractions tonight.
I'm going to grab you, Katie. Come here.
We got more cats than we've got hard drives.
So everything I've got running. No.
The fur ball of madness.
Keep going, Andrew.
Yeah, so everything I've got runs a Spinner. I think my home server runs, you know, 3 1.5 terabyte drives. My test box has got a 250 or a 1 terabyte or something in it. And all my laptops are running whatever drive they came with. I haven't spent a lot of money on upgrades. I sort of tend to go with the thing, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. To a large degree. Also, the price point for me for SSDs out here in Australia hasn't come down far enough to offset the value of the performance.
Oh, you just haven't tried them yet. You might.
Oh, no, I've tried them.
No, I know. I know.
I've tried them on tablets and you know, netbooks. But for me, if I want something that's over, all my systems have over 500 gig drives in them. So to hit that price point, I think you're still not in the sweet spot.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I too have not been one to necessarily swap a lot of things out. Although in the last year or two, I have been swapping a lot of SSDs for spinners, especially in laptops. It just makes a lot of sense. And here in the U.S., you know, we were picking them up for way less than a dollar a gig. And so, you know, I was able to pick up some 80 gig drives and for not a lot and get those swapped. So it was a good thing to do. And I still think it is. I took, you know, we've talked about that HP DM1Z that I bought a long time ago, that you and I, and that I breathed some new life into that thing with an SSD. So it was a good purchase and a good upgrade. Yeah. That thing still seems to be cooking along. Anything else, Andrew?
Yeah, I bought life into my I've got a DM1 as well, the Core i3 version, and I bought life into that by putting Windows 8 on it. So for me, there was a cost trade-off between, you know, a $40 Windows license versus, you know, a $500 disk to replace something with similar size to what I already had. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a technology trade-off, I suppose.
Yeah, you do what you can. I mean, you kind of make it work. You know, you kind of make it go, you know, go in your favor from that standpoint, from a speed perspective. I want to ask the second question. I want to ask is, did you have anything else, Andrew?
I was going to say it's not a lack of desire. It's a lack of suitable price.
Right.
For me.
Yeah. No. Right on. It's priorities. You got a couple young ones coming along, taking some money up. So a
couple extra mouths to feed. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been in a position lately. I haven't been buying a lot of stuff, a lot of tech.
You've got more tech than I've dreamed of at the moment.
Well, but I haven't been buying a lot lately. I've had some stuff falling in my lap, but I haven't been buying a lot lately. Just haven't been. It's been a little bit of a lull in the market. I just kind of, like you said a minute ago, I like what I got. So I've just kind of been, don't fix what's not broken.
I think if I was going to prioritize at the moment, I'd be looking at probably a Gen 8 microserver, and then I'd consider the disk I'd put into it.
Yeah.
And then sort of take it from there. You know, I'd probably boot that off an SSD, but, you know, time will tell once I get my hands on one at the right price.
Sure. Rennie, is that going on at your house? What's the...
It's a wild noises. Creature alive. loose in the house.
You got a zoo going on there, my friend.
Tell me about it.
I thought I saw a kangaroo bounce through earlier.
I need to visit Brisbane a little more often, I guess. One of the things I have I've really liked, and I'll just hold this up here. Kevin Schoonover sent these to me. These 10,000 RPM. Yeah, Velociraptors, and I put three of them in a RAID 0 on the, I got this Dell Precision Workstation 690, and man, that is just fast. It's faster than SSD. And I've got that LSI, Christian, you were talking about LSI.
Yeah.
It's got an LSI controller on it, and it's fast.
The LSI chip is good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's
what
good.
What kind of read writes were you getting?
I always compare it, you know, so it's like I get like 250 somethings out of my SSDs, and I was getting over 300 on my RAID.
Are you on SATA 2 then?
I am on SATA 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you're capping out the SSD because of the SATA 2 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah, because I think if you went with, depending on the drive, SSD on a little SATA 3, I'm hitting 500 read writes.
Oh, right on. Yeah. All my SSDs are SATA 2 at this point. Yeah.
So what you're doing, and my son has an SSD on a SATA 2, and he's getting right around 250 like you are, and you're maxing out, you're saturating the SATA 2 connection.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. No,
and I have props for what a SATA connector looks like.
Yeah. And
versus
and
the old ATA connectors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
IDE, whatever.
IDE.
IDE.
IDE. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got, Mike, you had some parts. You had some inside parts there.
So, just, you know, the inside of a, and these things are awesome. If you ever take apart a hard drive, these platters, this is what, you know, what they write on. These platters are super shiny. The mirror on that thing is just incredible. So I've taken all of our old ones apart and given them to the kids, and they just, you know, I'm sure they threw them away by then, but I like them. The reflection of them is really good. The other cool thing is they have crazy strong magnets inside of them. And, you know, you got to be careful when you take it apart because these magnets are stronger than what you think. And watch where you put them. But the magnets are just crazy strong, too. So those are fun.
Yeah,
that's inside of a spindle hard drive.
They snap together pretty tight when they, you know, that's got a, those magnets move that head that spins in there, and right, it's got to move it very, very fast.
I have stuck them on something before and had trouble getting them off.
Yeah. It's great if you've got old ones. You know, just know that there's some recyclable parts in there as well. There's some, you know, even the magnets are recyclable. You know, there's a limited amount of those things here on the planet.
Oh, I'm keeping mine.
But
I have some really old tech. I have like an old 5 1/4 inch disc. Risk.
Wow. I'd be more worried about the game that's on it than the technology.
That's this in what was the game with, or what was the movie with Matthew Broderick? War Games. They ran a whole World War III off of a floppy disk on that.
That was 8 inch though, wasn't it?
It was 1980. Yeah.
8-inch floppies, yeah.
Yeah, so Lops was saying keep those magnets away from the 5 1/4-inch floppy. Yeah, I got the magnet in his own little spot away from everything, because you can do some damage to some stuff with those magnets. So, you know, don't set them on, don't put them too close to your monitor, don't put them too close to some other things that could damage them. So, and you can damage your fingers. You can damage your fingers.
Have you still got a drive that will read the floppy disk though, Mike?
You would ask that question, and I would happen to have one right here.
Oh, I was going to say, I can send you one if you need one.
I can take out the floppy that's in it. System disk. Oh, DOS 6.2, I think.
Really? That came on 5 1/4?
Well, I'll put it on 5 1/4. So, yes, I have that drive, and I have the old 3.5-inch drive, too.
Yeah, no, I don't know if we'll consider those hard drives.
No, but, you know, it's come a long way from when we got our first computer. When I started working at Waffle House, and I work at Waffle House, our computer had 2 5 1/4-inch drives. And you think about what we've come from that, those 2 5 1/4-inch drives to now these SSDs that, are so fast, so incredibly fast, or the hard drives that are 4 terabyte. It's just amazing, you know, where things have come. But like you, it seems like we're hitting a bottleneck with the storage on the.
I don't know if it's on those bottleneck drives. As much as it just is a lack of interest. You know, it just doesn't seem like people need a 5 terabyte or a 6 terabyte drive, right? It just seems like. Yeah.
I think there's a niche of that. So I think like Christian was saying earlier, what you're saying is the majority of the people are doing more and more in the cloud and more with that, needing less storage at home. But there's a niche of people, photographers being one of them, that can suck up hard drive space like crazy. You know, you go out, I got a 32 gig hard drive, and I can fill that thing up when I go out and take photos. So if you're an active photographer shooting and filling up your 32 gig, you know, memory card, and I don't fill it up every time I go out, you're filling up hard drive space pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think you're right.
Once you start talking about 5 and 6, you know, terabyte drives, I know that read the other day that Seagate's prepping some for the enterprise, and I think that's where they're all going to go. I mean, the more demand there is for cloud storage and everything else, that the more density they're going to want in their hard drives. Full stop. Mm-hmm. But for a home user, would be an uncommon requirement, I would think.
Yeah, I think for the average user, the phones are getting so much better with photos that a lot of them are taking. They're not buying point-and-shoot cameras. They're buying these. These things write them up to the Dropbox or write them up to almost put that near the magnets. or write it up to, you know, the cloud somewhere.
SkyDrive or Google Plus or whatever, right? Dropbox. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know for sure. We're getting less and less. Let's talk about lessons learned with hard drives. So somebody had mentioned earlier, you know, kind of a caveat, some things I've learned. You know, we say keep the magnets away from the drives. So and let's not go too far back with them, right? Let's just kind of talk about the modern hard drive that's out there right now. What does the average user, and I'll just open this up, open forum here, what's the average user need to watch out for these days with drives? Are there some gotchas out there that you really need to be careful and watch for?
Let me say one thing. So maybe not buying of the drive, but I think that you should make sure it has adequate cooling of the drive. You know, if you buy a computer, stick it into your desk cabinet and shut the door, on that thing, and it sits in there and just baking. You know, heat will eventually kill one of those drives.
So we still need to worry about heat on hard drives. They haven't figured
out. I think
that
on the spindles, you know, an SSD maybe not nearly as much.
Yeah.
But I like cases that give good, decent airflow over the hard drive and some breathing room, and then you know, occasionally clean out your computer. That's an average guy thing right there. Is something like that. Yeah. All right. Next.
What else? What other caveats do we need to watch out for? Or mistakes that we've made with hard drives?
Don't store anything critical on anything.
Well, so Andrew...
In one location.
Yeah. So you refer to 3-2-1 backup, right?
Just or at least 2-1.
Yeah, at least get it backed up somewhere. I think that goes without saying. We have a whole show around that at the Home Server Show. But it's backup. Christian?
This is a little bit beyond the scope of the average guy, but one thing that can get really confusing in the server world and even intermediate stuff is having good volume labels for your disk drives, because like I know when we go in our BIOS for the setup of the disks and what order, it's like you don't know which one it is, and it's you really got to kind of come up with a system, because they can have like the same exact ID with one number different. Sometimes they're the exact same, and we just had a recent unfortunate thing where we ended up formatting one of our OS drives that wasn't backed up when we thought it was a spare data drive. So, and it's hard to do because you can't really change the serial number that it shows up in as the BIOS, but just kind of having a good roadmap for doing actual volume labels and knowing what you got, because when you start throwing around a lot of hard drives and you're picking up, you know, $99 off a shelf, it can get confusing. And especially, I remember when we were reconfiguring our servers with different OSs and stuff and changing around where which server had the RAID and all that, you just are like, it's very difficult to remember what's on what hard drive, especially if it's in a RAIDed solution. So you really want to be good about, you know, whether you get out a Sharpie and label things, or whether you, I know most average techies will at least, if it's a good drive or bad drive, they'll write what date the drive was last tested and what system it was in. So just kind of coming up with a label system that is reliable is important.
I think that's good for the average guy at home, is when you stick these things into a computer, you often can't, it's in a way where it's hard to read all the text that's on the top of the drive.
Right.
So you want to have something where when you look in your box, you can see
on the side,
from the side, because you know, whichever drive goes out, you want to be able to figure which one that is.
Right.
Now that's something we're all guilty of, because we get these new shiny drives, and the first thing we want to do is just jam them in and fire it up, right? And it might pay. Christian, that's just a great advice to take a few extra seconds, have it recognized, get it labeled. You know, get those little $30 label printers at Staples or whatever the equivalent is in whatever country you're in, and make that label and slap it on there, because you're right, you'll forget, that thing will sit for a year or two and you'll forget totally. And if you're a storage nerd like we all are in a lot of ways, you will absolutely forget, and then oh crap, now okay, so one went bad, which one did, you know, which one is it?
Yeah, you think you remember it when you stick it in the computer, but it's not going to die for a year, 2 years, 5 years, and by that time you have totally forgotten if you haven't labeled it.
Yeah, no, for sure. What else? What other caveats? What have we learned with hard drives? That's a great one, Christian.
Yeah.
What else?
I would say this is also more on the geeky side of things, but what you format your drive as, and I know that sounds bizarre because for the most part it's going to be NTFS on Windows, but if you're in a co-ecosystem where you're doing Mac and PC, you want to kind of come up with what your plan is for deciding, well, am I going to format everything as the Mac hard drive system and then have Windows tools to read that, or am I going to format everything as the Windows format and have tools on my Mac to read that? And that really just applies with external hard drives. So a lot of times you'll get like these 1 or 2 terabyte external drives, and you'll be switching back and forth between Windows and Mac if you're in a co-ecosystem. So that's kind of one thing you want to watch out for and kind of make a decision on, so that you can either A, not end up doing something stupid to your external drive, and B, you're kind of not going through this continual reevaluation of which system reads what. So.
Yeah, good call. What else?
What do you think about once you start getting bad sectors on a drive, whether you should fight it or just, you know, by doing check disk and repairing those, or at what point do you say, I need to get everything off of this because it's just a matter of time before it's dead?
Yeah, I would say, at least for me, there's a couple levels. So if you run check disk, you know, once every few months, and maybe once out of those 3 times it, you know, repairs something, chances are that's not a hard drive issue. And the first 1 or 2 times of check disk, I wouldn't really think anything more of it. When you start seeing bad sectors, you kind of have 2 options. If it's a limited scope, you can get away with reformatting so that it doesn't format those bad sectors and just takes them out of the volume. It's a little more murky, but you can still save on buying a new drive if it's not a huge loss. But if it's making weird noises and it's still running, get that thing backed up, get it off, because as soon as it makes those little clicking sounds that you think are going to go away, guess what? It's not. So anytime you hear a noise, that's your sign to hit the eject button. I'd say if you have suspicions, err on the side of caution. Obviously, I don't know how many times we say the word backup in home tech, but if you have good backups and it's not making funky noises, play with it, do a check disk, maybe reformat it with bad sectors, and then run a restore off home server, whatever floats your boat. But like I said, you hear the ticking noise, you run away.
Yeah, and we've all had those. We've all had those. Let me ask you this question while we're talking about caveats and weird things. What weird ways do we come up to fix these things? Everybody's kind of got their magic or their secret sauce when the drive starts to go bad and we didn't have it backed up and we absolutely need to get that data off of it. Anybody got any weird witch's brew on getting these things fixed?
I think we all know the freezer thing where you stick it in the freezer.
Yeah. That's one. Yeah. What else?
The 6-inch drop.
6-inch drop. I'm famous for that one.
Yeah.
What else?
That's all I know.
Okay. Anybody else? Anybody else got any weird remedies for getting things fixed? Magic?
Not that I've tried successfully anyway.
What about tools in fixing things? So there are some software, and of course, you know, SpinRite being the one that everybody goes to when in theory, and it's expensive. But any other tools besides SpinRite that you use or you've used successfully to get data back or to fix the drive? Crickets. None.
Yeah,
huh?
Not here. I've not. I guess since I have backups, I just haven't.
Yeah, just pulled the drives.
Yeah, I just pulled it off of there.
Pull the drives and call it good. There, I know Acronis has a lot of hard drive tools that come with it. You know, stuff that'll help you wipe the data off the drive and some of those kinds of things. Any favorite hard drive? Christian Messen's check disk here just a second ago. Of course, that comes with Windows
right
at its base. Any other tools that you use to check for bad sectors? For a while, it seemed like every hard drive company had its own kind of diagnostic program.
I just use check disk.
Okay.
Okay. I know, like, the tools for, like, cloning and stuff is more popular, but I know, like, on the super consumer-y end of things, like, HP used to have that disk doctor where when the BIOS came up, you could press a key that would do, like, a basic system test where it would test your CPU, hard drive, etc. So that was one way to test. There is also in Windows Let me refresh my memory here. If you go to Control Panel and you go to and you switch to View All Icons, and then you go to Performance Information and Tools, in there is this little secret no one knows about that it's taking forever to come up on my computer. There we go. If you click the Advanced Tools on the left, if you're in Windows 7, there is a... Oh, come on. It's one of these. Give me a hot second. It's either something in the Performance Monitor or the Resource Monitor that lets you do a full health profile of your computer, and it includes some intense hard drive tests. I'm just trying to remember where the heck that thing is, because I don't remember.
Well, while you're looking, I should have Richard.
Oh, here we go. Sorry. If you scroll down, so Control Panel, Performance Information and Tools, then click Advanced Tools. At the very bottom, there's a link that says Generate a System Health Report. You click that link, it'll bring up a subsection of the Resource and Performance Monitor, and then it'll say Collecting Data for 60 Seconds. That'll pretty much do a generic test on all your components on the PC, and if that comes out green, you should be in good standing.
Okay. I was going to say I should have Rich O'Neill on the show next week. We're going to talk about hard drives with another group. Another group's coming out to do that, and I'm trying to think real quick. Nathaniel Lindley and John Stutzman will be out to talk about it. But Rich is also kind of a hard drive nerd, I think, from days back. And he mentions Crystal Disk Info as a tool he uses, as well as OS Smart.
Yeah, the Smart Utility, like Unraid, I mentioned Unraid earlier, Unraid uses the Smart Utility to give you health warnings on the hard drives.
Yeah, the industry tried to help us out for a while with Smart and put some self-diagnostic stuff on there that would report before the drive went bad.
Right.
I don't know if Smart ever lived up to its promise. You know, it kind of worked and it kind of didn't. Wasn't as reliable as maybe I was hoping for.
Yeah. What I found with Unraid, because I've lost two drives in Unraid before, and what I have found is by the time Smart told me something was wrong, it was too late.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what, like I said, I don't think it's as reliable on there. So, okay. So, and Lopta says that Smart is handy if it's used right.
I must have used it left.
Yeah. Well, I just, it hasn't been great for me. Let me just say it that way. Let's shift gears a little bit. Before I do that, I'm going to shift gears. Any other thoughts on caveats or tools that you use, or any from an average tech guy perspective? Any other things about the ins and outs there of fixing them? Anything? Mm-mm. Okay, let's talk about where we buy these things. And I'm really interested. This is a very personal thing, so I'm going to start again with Rennie and make it my way over to, hey, we've got an Australian sandwich. This is awesome. I'm going to start with Rennie, go to Andrew. Rennie, what do you like when you're out purchasing drives? What are the one or two or three places that you kind of favor when it comes to purchasing these things?
Well, in Australia, the big box boys haven't really got into the hard drive game at all. They'll sell you an external one, but they won't sell you an internal. They certainly won't sell you an SSD, and they certainly won't sell you an internal hard disk drive. So there's still a lot of mum and dad shops out there. But generally, you go to a site called Static Ice, and that you. You know, you do your shopping there basically. Once you know what you want, as long as the postage isn't a overriding factor, I'll buy it from anywhere. But there is a local computer shop here about, I don't know, 10 miles away. They're pretty competitive on their pricing, so I generally just go there.
Okay, we are so spoiled here in the United States. Yeah. Zadler reminds me of this all the time. I was just had a long conversation with him last night, and I was looking at Amazon.ca, right, the Canadian version of it, and we were looking at these microphones. And in Canada, these things are $65, and in the U.S., they're $35. You know, and you're like, why? Why are they $30 more? Just, you know, John lives 2 hours from the U.S. border, so it's not like it takes forever to get to Montreal, or it's like out in the middle, out in the boonies. But he reminds me we're kind of spoiled here in the U.S. So I apologize for you Australian folks that where it's harder to get that equipment. You know,
I would tell them to move down here, but we don't want them down here.
Oh, she's out there listening, Mike.
That's why I said that.
Rennie, go ahead, Mike. You're up.
No,
next.
Go ahead, Rennie.
That was about it, really. Most of the shops I visit to retail wise, it's only one or two. Some of them are horribly expensive. Others are reasonable. That's same old story. But you buy online. There's a place in Melbourne called PC Case Gear, which is fairly reasonable. I don't know too much about Sydney, but yeah, there's no Amazons. None of the department stores.
Yeah, I was disappointed. I thought Amazon was in Australia, and I was talking with Andrew last week, and he's like, "No, we don't have Amazon here." I'm like, "What? How did that not happen?"
They're not worldwide.
If
you go to amazon.com.au, it takes you to Amazon UK at the moment. So obviously they've got it in the pipeline. It's just a matter of when, I think.
Okay. Well, that's too bad. Rennie, go ahead.
I was trying to say there are rumors that Amazon's been looking for warehouse space or somewhere to put a warehouse around Sydney.
There's not enough room in Australia to put a warehouse? Or she has run out of bush or what?
Nah, plenty of that.
Yeah, I was going to say plenty of space. Well, anyways, okay. So, Mike Howard, where do you shop for these
things? I get them from one of three places. I get it from either Newegg, Micro Center, which we have a Micro Center nearby, or I get it using the Average Guy link on Amazon. What was that link again?
Nicely done. That's the averageguy.tv/Amazon.
So I buy it from one of those three places. If I need it right away, I just drive down to Micro Center, pick one up, and come back. And that has happened sometimes where I want something quick. A hard drive's died. I want to go get another one to replace it. Yeah. If not, I will look at either Amazon and use the Average Guy link or Newegg, whichever one I find is cheaper. If they're about the same, I use the Average Guy link.
Okay. Well, that's nice of you to plug me, buddy. Wow, something must have, the cats must have decided to take over. We lost Christian and Rennie at the same time.
As far as I don't know. Yeah, that was kind of weird. I don't know if this is the next question. I'm jumping the gun, but as far as brand goes, while I mentioned I have a whole mix of crazy stuff earlier, I generally try and stick with Western Digital.
Any reason? Just because you've had luck? Good luck?
I like their return policy better.
Okay. The hard drive companies have gotten a lot better at RMA. And so most of them now, if a drive goes bad, you just catch them on the website and then send it in and they send you a new one. It works pretty slick. Yeah.
We got to train Rennie on muting as he takes his mic off.
We need to train everybody on muting. Good God. All right. I'm a Newegg Amazon guy, although I have bought them at Best Buy in the past if they've got a deal run on them. I will get them locally. But I had mentioned earlier, Kevin Schoonover turned me onto this gohardrive.com. And that's a really good... Christian, mute that next time for me, bud.
Sorry, just as I set it down, I heard Jim's voice going, "Turn the mute on." So sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
I'm getting better.
Jim, when you're buying from Newegg, do you use any special link?
Newegg? No. Well, I use the JPEG to RAW.
There you go.
Okay, let's quit doing that. But this Go Hard Drive site, Kevin's kind of turned me onto it, and for some white label drives, it's very, very reasonable. And so that would be one. I don't have an affiliate code over there. That would be one I would check out. Christian, where do you and Gary like to buy the drives?
Newegg.com.
Okay. Just all the time, totally loyal there, or will you shop a deal?
It's like if you manage to find some better deal than Newegg, it's probably like a dollar's difference, and for the loyalty and the hassle of having to switch over somewhere else, it's not worth it.
Okay.
Very good. Most items on Newegg are free shipping, wholesale, the whole deal. So, really, I don't think we've ever had a negative experience with Newegg, which is really... And they're great about RMAs and defectives. They're just... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Andrew, any other thoughts on the difficulty of finding hard drives, good hard drive space there in Australia?
I don't think it's particularly hard to find storage here. I think it's just cost prohibitive. I mean, for me, I don't use any cloud services predominantly because of the cost of bandwidth. From a brand perspective, I know you just touched on it before. I have been using Seagate, and I'm probably going to be switching to Western Digital. Just purely from the perspective that I'm going to switch to Red Drives.
Okay. Let's talk real quick while you brought that up. Red drives versus green drives. You know, the green are kind of the economy drives. You say you're switching over to Reds.
Yeah, I'm going to switch to Reds. Based on what I've read, they're better for a 24/7 running solution than the 24/7 air quotes green drives. Depending what you read and what you believe, the green drive is effectively the same as a blue or a black if you're talking Western Digital, with a lower quality grading. So similar to your CPU gradings, you know, where everything gets produced to be a 4 gigahertz processor, and you know, they downgrade them or downrate them based on how they perform on the bench. I've got 3 1.5 terabyte Seagate 24/7 drives, and they all run at about, you know, 50 degrees Celsius, and you know, the allocated sector counts are going up gradually on all of them. And I sort of figure, well, I might as well, you know, switch to something that's designed to run in a SAN type environment, SAN or NAS environment, and just, you know, see how we see what my experience looks like. From an RMA perspective with Seagate, I found them to be pretty good. You know, log a ticket, you know, provide a screenshot of, you know, the errors out of something like Crystal Disk Info, and they've been very good at you know, sight unseen, you know, get the RMA, send off the drive, and get another one 2 or 3 days later from Singapore. So, you know, response from Seagate for me has been dynamite.
What's the trip to Singapore for you guys? How far is that? That's a lot closer than it is for us. So I imagine the shipping.
I think it's about 8 hours if you're in a plane. But I think it was $12 to send a dead disk to Singapore, and I had a new one back 2 days later.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
So that was pretty good. I was happy with that.
Yeah, I forget.
I've had returns to Seagate too, and they've, you know, as Andrew said, it's only taken 3 or 4 days, and they're good to go.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So, okay. So we've talked about what the tools we use. We talk about where we get them. Let me throw this question out, because this used to be a big deal a couple of years ago. Do we have to defrag these things anymore? I mean, I can't remember the last time I did it. Am I missing something, or do I need to worry about defragging my hard drive anymore?
The OS pretty much automatically schedules it now if it's a regular spinning drive, and if it's not, then if it's a SSD, it automatically disables it, so it's kind of automated at this point.
In the enterprise, we do schedule up defrags over, you know, big RAID arrays, so... you know, one that I'm thinking of at the moment, we've got a RAID array that's got about 8.7 terabytes of disk in it, and that thing's set to do a defrag on a monthly basis, just because the access performance of it, if we don't, degrades to the point that, you know, you've got people on the phone all the time, I can't get to my data, or I'm getting timeouts reading from disk, and when you look at it, you know, you actually see errors coming up on the RAID controllers, but at home, I don't bother. Couldn't tell you the last time. Probably Windows 98 for me.
I've had friends' laptops in here that, you know, almost full and going as slow as anything. And a defrag will get you, you know, a bit of that performance back for sure. But I don't do it regularly on any of my disks, I'm afraid.
I remember we used to you set that defrag to run overnight, and you know, go to bed and come back in the morning, and it was fun to watch, right? It would do its, in those Windows 98 days, it would do its, you know, move blocks around, and it had this visual representation, and it was just fun. It just felt like you were cleaning the drive up with something, you know, and it was. But since the Vista days, I just have never, I haven't even thought about defragging a drive. So the answer is pretty much for the modern OS, no, at this point. You don't really need to defrag anymore. Is that right? All right, I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah.
Then I'll take that as a yes. Anything else, guys? What am I missing when we're talking about hard drives? Any other points that you wanted to make as we kind of come in for a landing on this discussion?
I think keep an eye on the health of your drive using something like a Crystal Disk Info or the like. I think that a lot of people get caught out because they don't realize a disk's going to fail, whereas there are a lot of free utilities out there that'll tell you where the disk is at and what it's doing, and you know, especially if you start hearing it make weird noises, you know, get onto it pronto.
Yeah, that's probably good advice. What else? Anything else?
You should never hear a click or a buzz or a squeak from a hard drive.
Yeah, if it's clicking, I think Christian said that earlier, if it's clicking, it needs to be removed right away. That used to
ironically,
go ahead, Rennie.
Ironically, I've got a DVR, a JVC one's probably about 5 years old, and about 2 years ago it started to click, and I thought, oh, this isn't going to last very long. Next day it was gone.
Oh.
Didn't hear it again for another 6 months, then it started clicking again, and you know, it lasts for a day maybe, and that thing's still going. So
yeah.
Don't be too gun shy.
Right Christian, any other as we're coming in for a landing here, any other thoughts or warnings or advice on hard drives? Anything you were thinking about?
Not really. I'd just say watch the market, because you can get good deals if you're not like super hyper on, I need a drive right this second. So like, plan on buying at least one spare drive that you never plan to use, and that way when something does go wrong, you have a nice hot swap. Because like I said, those prices will vary, so you can get really good steals that are, you know, just like it's all price and demand. Like when the Japanese manufacturing plants were taken out, the hard drive prices went through the roof because they didn't have the supply, right? So that cycle is happening with as the technology evolves. So just watch the market, because you can get really good deals and have spare hard drives and high quality hard drives ready to go at any given time. And yes, I am about to kill the cat again, but
it's the cat show.
Yeah,
it's the cat show. That's funny. Yeah. I think it's good advice. Mike, anything?
I think, you know, going back to backup, I think the one thing you need to be thinking is tomorrow, all your hard drives are one day closer to failure. They will all eventually fail at some point, so you need to be thinking about that. The spare that Christian just talked about is a great idea, to have one on hand, so when one starts to die, you can easily flip over. But just make sure you're backing up. And you know, when we had a backup show with you guys, the average guys came over to JPEG Raw and did a backup show. We're talking to Kathleen, who was a co-host, and what she had was an external drive device that she stuck two drives down into, and she had one drive backing up to the other drive. And that's what she thought was her protection. And, you know, I asked her, what if one of the kids spilled their drink into that device and fried both of the drives? Do they ever have drinks around the drives? And she said, yeah, all the time. So what if they hit the cord and flung them across the room? You know, so you need to be thinking about that. You know, a lot of people buy these external drives, but you need to be thinking about a good backup plan, which should include an off-site thing. Because every drive in your house, SSD or non-SSD, or spindle, will die at some point.
Right. Good point. Rennie, any last thoughts?
Yeah, just one thing on the use of SSDs, you know, obviously for system drives in particular. It's a good idea to make, you know, to limit the amount of writing that they have to do, because that does tend to reduce their longevity. So you turn off things like the paging file and indexing, which you don't really need because they're fast enough without that. And put all your data on a, you know, redirect or map all your data, documents and photos and everything to a spinning drive. I think PC Doc did an article on it a while ago. I think I put it in the show notes.
Yeah, Jim? No, you did. I just threw it in chat too as well.
Yeah, so there's some good tips there as to how to minimize the amount of grinding that your SSD has to do and should make it last a bit longer. And I follow this religiously, but I haven't had an SSD fail yet. So.
Yeah, you know, you just remind me as I was looking at the broadcast server. If you're on live stream, you can see this. If you're on YouTube, you can't. But I was bringing up. I'm guilty of this. This is my broadcast server, and it writes. It's constantly writing when I'm doing a broadcast. It's constantly writing the video file to the drive.
To
the C drive. Yeah,
that's not good, Jim.
No. So at one point, I thought I had moved that. You know, if I look at the video file, these are all the videos, and I record a lot. There's a lot of files there, but those it looks like, and it creates a lot of temp files when it's creating the thing. I put a separate drive in there. At one point, I must have had trouble with Procaster, and I must have moved. Oh yeah, because we were having all kinds of video problems back during the CES time. So beginning of the year, and remember, I was having all kinds of performance problems, and so I thought, screw it, I'm gonna eliminate everything, and I'm just gonna write those files to the SSD because that's fast. It's faster than the spinning drive, but I never changed it back. So that's a good, Rennie, that's a really good point. I'm probably overriding to this drive.
Yeah, even if it's SSD, not SSD, Jim, you want those video files to be writing to a drive other than your OS drive.
Yeah. Well,
and other, you know, like Rennie said, you don't want your page file, and if you're using Windows, you don't want your page file to be on an SSD.
Yeah, that doc, I'll put it from Mike Fauché at Docs World. He did a nice write-up on all the things you do if you're going to install an SSD. And, you know, the number one recommendation is you reinstall Windows from scratch because there's a lot of things on the install that will optimize for the SSD on its way in. So that's the number one thing I always tell people. Don't copy over reinstall when you're going from a spinner to an SSD. Guys, we're out of time. And not really, but I want to try and keep this to an hour and 20 minutes, so we'll stay around for the post show. I know Christian's got to take off. Yeah, the guys in Australia, they got all day. It's just like lunchtime over there. They could hang out all afternoon. But I want to remind folks, first I want to say thanks for coming out. If you're listening live, it's always great to have you guys out here listening live. So thanks, chat room. Good stuff tonight. Some good stuff. And other Jim just said it's time to buy a new SSD, Jim. So, yeah. Well, it's not gone yet. Certainly I'll need to make a change to that. But want to remind you, if you're listening to the recorded version of this and you're still downloading the MP3, or you're getting it any other way, or you're having a hard time listening to the podcast on a regular basis each week, give Stitcher a try. We've been pipping this for a while now. We don't make any money off of it, but Stitcher is available for both Android and iPhone platforms. Great way to listen to podcasts at home and on the road. It is all streaming, and it is all only audio, but a great way to listen to it. More and more vehicles are getting Stitcher installed as an app in cars, and they've got a great iPhone app as well that's got some nice in-car buttons that nice and big that you can push play on. Stitcher.com, search Home Tech. It's education for your ears. And you can also subscribe to the show on YouTube now. I got some new links, theaverageguy.tv/YouTube, where you can catch the show each week live out here at theaverageguy.tv. Don't forget, we've got a really good group on Facebook, and all of you guys are a part of that at one time or another. All the hosts are a part of that. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook and ask to join the group if you're not already in. And then we mentioned the Amazon link a million times. I'm not going to mention it anymore. But we do have a Geeks.com affiliate as well if you're purchasing. And they're a great place to buy cables. It's a little bit cheaper than Amazon or even Newegg even sometimes. Geeks.com. Go out to theaverageguy.tv/geeks. Just give it a look. Give it a try. We make a few pennies if you do that. And be interested to get your feedback on that. It's a brand new affiliate relationship. Just be interested to get your feedback on that. Guys, thanks for coming out tonight. Andrew and Christian, always great to have you. Every
great
week
to
you can be
here.
On here. Rennie and Mike, good to have you guys on again. Rennie, really good to see you back. And Mike, again, great
Thank
news
you.
on your cancer as well, and we're glad that you're doing better. And we'll wrap it up for this Thursday. We'll do it all again next Thursday. We're going to talk some more hard drives next week, so if you want to join us for that, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv/live. All right, second podcast for the day for me, and I am done. We'll go into the post show. You can only get the post show if you come out and listen live, so come out and join us on Thursday nights. We'll do it again next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Good night.
Not fair.
See ya.
Speaking of bugs everywhere, are you watching this show called Naked and Afraid?
No. Naked and Afraid?
So this is a survival show.
That doesn't sound good.
Sounds like a Bear Grylls thing.
It is. It's like Bear Grylls. It's they drop a guy and a girl off. They're both naked into this jungle or remote beach or whatever, and they have to survive on their own. They get to bring one tool. So they're naked. They get to bring one tool, like I'll bring an axe or I'll bring a fire starter. And that's it. And you got to survive on your own for 21 days.
I'd be taking some freaking clothes.
Yeah, my one thing is I'm bringing clothes.
Pair of thongs.
Yeah. Or at least one. Are you drinking Melbourne bitter, Rennie?
No. Forex bitter.
That's just as bad.
Hold on, let me see.
All I could see was the red can.
Hold that up again. Let's see what we got.
Oh,
here.
Sorry.
Yeah, we didn't see it. Nice. 4X?
Mm-hmm.
Bitter?
Queenslanders can't spell.
4X bitter.
Yeah, the rest of the country, it's how they can't make beer with a dam as well.
It's like acid, Australian for beer. Oh, man. That's crazy. Oh, dear.